It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sozi!
No, that's Matthew Sozi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sozi.
Wrestling with anticipation, weren't you? Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msosi@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter at Matthew Sosi. I said it.
That Twitter.
At WFY. Well, and the show is available on as a podcast, also available on iTunes, and we have a blog which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com. I say next week we begin the
staff picks.
Yes,
we will
Film
be working
Sociology Library.
Or library, if you're a certain forward for the Indiana Pacers. The voice you heard, not wearing blue, so he hates football. That's Kobe Slagle.
That's not true.
That's not true? You're not wearing your pride? Our guest is.
I know.
I'm just a bitter old man, so...
Where's your... Oh.
Because my team's not in... We aren't in the playoffs.
You guys didn't make the playoffs?
Yeah, we did not make the playoffs. Here at Film Sociology, we make fun of sports fans who use we as if they're on the field of play. So, that being said, our guest, one of our regulars, is it a new intro or
yes.
Do we have... Okay, we have a new intro. You're looking for it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all right. It's good. The first on-air snafu of 2013.
Second, actually.
Well, we're not going to talk about the first.
There we go.
All right. What's going on with the film yap?
Oh, you know, a little of this, a little of this.
Wow, great info, Joe. Thanks. Joe Shearer, the film yap. I think instead of asking that question at the whenever these guys are on, we just play that.
Yeah, that's about it. How's everyone doing?
So happy New Year to Joe and Kobe and to everybody in Film Sociology land. It sounds like a theme park that nobody wants to really. Nobody wants an e-ticket on that one. So yes, it is. It's January 4th, and
I say happy birthday to my mother? Today?
No, you cannot.
Okay,
no,
I won't say that then.
No.
I won't say happy birthday to my son tomorrow and my brother-in-law tomorrow.
Well, you have a busy weekend.
Yeah.
That's a lot of cake and presents.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to half of the Shearer family. Now, what are you supposed to say to your new man love, Tracy Forner?
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, I was going to work it in
I read it, so no, I'm just going to get you on that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's say my appearance here has been much ballyhooed.
Oh, we love Facebook. And yes, Tracy, we will get you on sometime very soon. It's not a problem. Or I will, you know, ask you several times until I get you on. I'm kidding. I love you. Not that way. Okay. So, yes, it's we will be. I'm curious, when did you put out your top and worst 10 list officially?
It is actually officially posted yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've had it compiled for maybe a week, and I've just been too lazy to actually type out the things that, you know.
This is what happens when the new year happens on a Tuesday, I think.
Yes, exactly right.
And I did the first draft of mine when Ed Johnsonat and I were on No Limits 2 weeks ago. So, and of course, I always do mine in drafts. There's, you know, in the case of No Limits, they asked me, so I compiled one. And of course, it became different at the end of the calendar year. And of course, now it's January 4th, so I will reveal it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it changes the first week of February and the first week of March. So if it does, I'll let you know.
Maybe it'll change before we get to it on the show today.
You think? Oh, because of the movies we're talking about. Yes, well, perhaps. We'll see. There are three films worth noting. Well, I should mention this because as soon as I bring up the title, Kobe will immediately have a reaction. But apparently there is it's not a remake, it's a continuing saga, and it's in 3D of Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's screened for us.
3D. Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw 3D is what it's called. So
they should have called that Leatherface Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3, except that they already did that.
Part 3? And then there was Texas Chainsaw 2. That's the one with McConaughey and Zellweger.
No, that was like...
I think
that was like 7, yeah.
Or it's dumb.
It is dumb, yeah. Kobe's
going to be hitting that hard today.
There was about 5 minutes where they did cool stuff, even though no one in the movie was cool.
He's got new sound toys to play with.
And we miss Gina. We have to say
we do miss just being an all boys club now.
Yeah.
That sounds bad.
Yeah.
So anyway, that wasn't reviewed for us, and that's okay. So we're gonna move on to
film you ever saw. Well, my next one will be better.
We didn't see it, so we don't know. I just know we know one person who will not see Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Yep.
That would be you, Kobe Slagle.
Yep. Yep.
And Fair Sweet Bianca really has no interest either.
Nope. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Did you ask her?
Or
did you see a commercial of it?
No, it's gotten to the point, it's one of those things where we'll be at a movie and then in the trailers that come on before the feature starts,
that's
something like this, or Sinister, or what the hell ever scary thing is going to be on. It's, oh yeah, she'll give me a look like, oh, we're going to see that, right? No.
No.
Yeah.
Is she that with you with Les Mis and Anna Karenina?
No, when she actually wants to see something, it's a... hit the hand on the
okay. See, we just kind of after a while when you've been an old married couple, like not Joe and me separately, but
not to each other,
not to each other,
because that's not
we have our own, we're married but to other women. But there you will have that kind of look. You look over at the missus and you're like, yeah. Now of course I also see you going with your cheesecake reaction. So anyway,
it's also an art film.
It's Texas Chainsaw is not an art film.
Yeah, I don't think that
qualifies. We'll talk about three films that could be considered art films, maybe. The first one is the new film from Gus Van Sant, even though he's kind of director for hire in this, called Promised Land. This is the film that stars and is co-written and co-produced by Matt Damon and John Krasinski. Mm-hmm. And in this one, Damon... and the always reliable Frances McDormand, and I'm not saying that just because Ed also wrote it in his Nouveau review, but Frances McDormand is reliable as hell.
Oh, yeah.
But they play...
even in Transformers 3, you know.
she
elevated the film at least.
It's hard to elevate something that's underground. But they are basically, for lack of a better comparison, they're salesmen to go into a small... small Americana town to get people to sign up for natural gas, which is below the surface, and John Krasinski is a environmentalist who comes in and is also trying to steal the thunder. At times it felt like, especially when you have Krasinski and Damon together, and this takes maybe about 20 minutes into the picture when Krasinski shows up, there's a feeling it almost was going to become a screwball comedy because of the competing nature of both guys. Yeah. There's also a female teacher that both guys have an eye for, but in the story it doesn't really go anywhere. But it starts to become a debate over whether a town should or should not get into natural gas under their homes and selling their property or being bought out.
Yeah.
And the Damon character, well, let's just say he's going to change in some way, shape, or form by the end of the picture. I won't give away more than I already have, more than the trailers already really have.
Yeah.
And this is a film that this has been done since, I guess, the birth of cinema, where you have George Clooney did this 10 years ago, not 10 years ago, but a few years ago, I think of something like Up in the Air. But it's a story of the shark who gets a soul.
Yeah, exactly right.
And it's not earth-shattering. And, I mean, the performances are fine, and usually performances for me will help elevate what I don't think is that very exciting a script. It's timely. It is, I think, pretty balanced, especially with the director, with the producers, the writers, and the stars all working on this together, yeah, as far as showing the pros and cons of selling your property and pretty much rolling up the rug on an entire town.
Yeah.
But there's also, and I know our buddy, our Hell on Wheels pal, Richard Probst, hated. Yes, I think I have a new title for Richard. But I know I remember reading his review where he hated the plot twist, which we don't want to give away.
No.
But I will say I would have been more blown away by the plot twist if I was considerably younger and had not seen films like this before.
Yeah, I liked the plot twist. I would have liked it more if the result of that plot twist had been a little different.
Uh-huh.
But at the time it happened, I was like, okay, yes, yeah.
Sure.
And then the sort of the climax of the film comes, and I was kind of like,
I lumped this film in the same category as The Ides of March, where, mm-hmm, ooh, politicians are corrupt.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
in other news, the sun rises and sets.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah. You know, if you're a good person, you will fight these people.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, even if you're being paid by them, you know, that's kind of the ultimate message of the whole thing. Things could have gone better.
It could have
in a different direction to make a better film, I should say.
Could have been sharper.
It could have been, yeah, because, you know, this twist happens and you're kind of like, okay, where does it go from here? It's going to go
which we kind of knew was going to happen because of Matt Damon's character.
Yeah, yeah, and it would have been refreshing had it just not gone that way. You know, if you let something else happen, or if perhaps, you know, something else happens.
Well, you guys are so cryptic.
Well, and of course, we at times here at Film Sociology and other critics, we sometimes penalize the film for not being what we want it to be.
Exactly.
I'm looking directly at you, the film known as Flight.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a really appropriate unlocked hotel room, and
just happens to be
unlocked and fully stacked. But then I thought, oh gosh. Okay, fine. Let's have him get away with it. No, we can't do that. Can't do that. So, anyway, I will say if you enjoy Matt Damon and John Krasinski, also Hal Holbrook is in this. It's always good to see Hal Holbrook and Frances McDormand, of course. So if you like seeing these actors, it's good performances, not the most earth-shattering screenplay. And I'm also wondering maybe if the writers, producers, and actors also wanted to bring up this matter. To a platform for more people to be aware of this subject. So, because I guess this is the only time I can really get away with saying fracking.
Yes.
So,
yes.
And it's,
and they
brought
say
up
it
in
a lot.
They say it a lot, but it's not a bad TV edit of Do the Right Thing, Scarface, or Glengarry Glenn Ross. Yeah.
They actually do a good job of explaining what that is.
Yes.
Without getting too dull and scientific.
Correct.
Yeah, and it involves John Krasinski lighting models on fire in front of school children.
And of course, Ed Johnson on it knew. If you read Ed's review in Nuvo, which I highly recommend, he does make a point about when that moment happens. What would really happen in real life land if somebody set fire to something in a classroom?
Yeah.
So we're with you, Ed. I hear you. So. So with that being said, oh, by the way, this film is rated R because of language, and I'm tired of movies being rated R because of language.
Yeah.
Get over it.
Really?
Your kids have heard it.
Really?
Yes, your kids, all of your kids have heard it. And if they haven't, they will.
Yeah.
There.
Otter, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Okay, moving on to a film that this is one of those films that it opened in the big three to be considered for award consideration, and it's finally in Indianapolis. It's actually here earlier than I had anticipated, so I'm enjoying that. But it's called The Impossible, and this is known in circles as the Ewan McGregor-Naomi Watts tsunami movie. They are on vacation, and they are in Thailand, and then, well, hell breaks loose, basically. I know everybody is, a lot of critics have already mentioned this, so I will just hop onto this bandwagon. Not really bandwagon, just saying. But if you remember, anybody who saw the Clint Eastwood film Hereafter, that's about us critics. That's about it.
Uh-huh. Unfortunately.
That tsunami scene at the beginning was really impressive.
Yeah.
And this film takes that scene and just kind of blows it out of the water. It's really hard to watch. It is really uncomfortable and scary, frightfully effective. And then it's the breakup, you know, because of this, the Naomi Watts character is flushed away in one way, as well as Ewan McGregor, and of course their three sons. Not my three sons. That's the TV show from the 60s.
Yeah.
And Red Clay is a great album, Kobe. Shut up. But
what do you have against Fred McMurray, really?
Now, I'll get to my Fred McMurray story after the reviews. So, and it's what happens afterwards, and the family trying to reunite, and of course along their journey to getting back together, which really we're not really spoiling much. The trailers have already kind of done that. What they do and what has happened since then. It's interesting because the film is very effective. I think I would want this film to be shorter, but I've sat through a lot worse.
Yeah.
I think, and one film that came up online was Melancholia, the Lars von Trier end of the world wedding movie,
yeah.
Which was also gut wrenching to watch in its own way. This one I think is even more so at times, especially with the tsunami moment. But once that is done, you get caught up with the characters getting to be with one another. I'm kind of concerned for Naomi Watts. I was thinking between this performance and the performances are very solid, but I think between this and Funny Games, she suffers a lot. And pull up Naomi Watts' IMDb page. I'm not saying she should do a romantic comedy with Matthew McConaughey, but
you're not saying she shouldn't.
But it's kind of like Jennifer Lawrence. Like, you can stop running through the woods now. You can. Yeah. So at least she's dancing with Bradley Cooper. But
how about we do this? We'll do a romantic comedy with Laura Herring, a follow up to Mulholland Drive.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that. There's a David Lynch movie you could watch, Kobe.
Yeah.
It's freaky, but in kind of a good way.
Yeah. There's a little thing in the middle that breaks it up a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. So rattle off some titles, because I know it seems like she's...
Where do you want to start?
Start at the top.
Naomi Watts.
Stuff that she's not working on right now, because we haven't seen it. We don't know it.
Okay, we got Movie 43 coming out.
Oh, that's right. That's coming out soon. Yeah.
The Impossible, J. Edgar, Dream House, Fair Game.
Dream House, she suffers a lot. Fair Game, she's quite good, and that's more mental anguish than physical.
Yeah. You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger.
Well, that's working with Woody Allen. No, I'm kidding.
Woody Allen is a special sort of portrait.
Yeah.
Mother and Child, The International, Funny Games, Eastern Promises, Painted Veil, Inland Empire, King Kong, King Kong Official Game of the Movie.
We don't review games here. Yeah.
Stay, The Ring 2.
Oh, jeez.
Torture,
That was torture for us.
That was for us, yeah.
Ellie Parker, I Heart Huckabees, Assassination of Richard Nixon, We Don't Live Here Anymore, 21 Grams.
Yeah, 21 Grams, that was the other one. Okay, so maybe it's not all of them, but I'm thinking, between 21 Grams, Funny Games, and this film, she did do a romantic comedy. She worked with Woody. So, just looking out for you, Naomi. That's all. So, all right, thank you.
Do something mainstream. Let's try that.
Do we really want that?
Well, I mean, if Naomi Watts is doing it,
you'll watch it.
Yeah.
We'll watch it. Yeah, that's fine. And there's a big chunk of the film that's devoted to Watts and the oldest son, played by Tom Holland, who has the same name as a Chicago blues musician friend of mine. Hi, Tom. And Tom is very good. Tom has like Freddie Highmore tendencies, which is a compliment. It's who is this kid? What else has he done? He carries a big chunk of the movie on his shoulders, and kudos for him on that. But this is also a film that once the big moment happens, it was kind of like 7 Pounds, only this film is better. It couldn't end fast enough for me. Yeah. It couldn't end fast. It almost had a Lincoln problem. I will say that when it comes to the film ending. So I will say, be prepared from a technical aspect to be really uncomfortable watching the pain and suffering that happens with the tsunami, because it does happen, and then stick around for the character's journey. So there's that.
Stick around.
Now
that was a good movie.
All right. Also opening in theaters and is finally out is the film debut of David Chase, the creator of Sopranos, called Not Fade Away, and this is the biggest name in the film, of course, is James Gandolfini, who plays the dad. But it's a family in New York, Long Island.
Yeah, I think it's Long Island.
In the mid-60s, and the son has discovered rock and roll and the Beatles and the Stones, and he's going to grow his hair out and join a band, and dad doesn't want him to, and, well, we've kind of heard the story before.
A couple times.
I can't remember, I think it was one of your correspondents, I'm not giving proper credit, but I thought it was somebody in the film Yap correspondence who said, David Chase shows you his record collection and tells you when rock and roll was great.
Yeah, I think Chris, I want to say Chris did the actual review. I don't know.
So I'm sorry I'm not giving proper credit for that. Yeah. But it is the rock band story only done by the creator of The Sopranos, and Gandolfini's in it. I think I'm in the minority, because I remember us walking out of the screening, and there was quite a bit of grumbling.
Yeah.
And I think I jokingly refer to it as David Chase's That Thing You Do.
Yeah.
It's not as fun as That Thing You Do, but I still liked some of the nostalgia on it. And I'll give full disclosure, the fact that it's only in one scene where the boy who was a drummer and becomes a singer, there is band turmoil, especially amongst kids in their late teens, early 20s. It happens. Mm-hmm. But there's a scene in the attic with an older female, and she's into the folk and the blues scene, which also happened in the 60s. I'm like, okay, they acknowledge this. There's a scene. There's scenes that kind of, if you know David Chase's work, they kind of make sense. The very first scene in the film is a young Mick Jagger and a young Keith Richards meeting on a train, and they start talking about Jimmy Reed and Elmore James, and that's how the birth of the Stones happened. Little more understanding than the very last scene, which is, I don't think, is controversial as the ending of The Sopranos, but I know it left some folks flabbergasted. That being said, I think it's a minor piece of nostalgia that I didn't mind visiting for a couple of hours. I'm in the minority on this. Yeah. Joe, what did you think?
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan. And actually, you know, we discussed That Thing You Do a little bit. Ed Johnson called it That Thing You Don't. So
yes, which I've always referred to as, because it's directed by Tom Hanks, and my buddy Laura Jansen referred to it as the nicest movie ever made.
Yeah.
No conflict, no harshness. But anyway.
Yeah. This one was not like that. Just to me, it was a lot of things that have been done. I mean, to the point of cliche, and you mash a bunch of them together. You know, you have the disapproving father. Of course, Gandolfini does it.
Cut your hair. You look like a girl. Yeah.
There's the great bit where he's asking his son out to dinner, and he says, a haircut's too much to ask, but if you show up at that restaurant without a coat and tie on, we're gonna tussle.
Yeah, we're gonna tussle or something. Yeah. Sounds like Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, you know, imagine Tony Soprano is just everybody's dad, which, you know,
nobody wants.
Yeah. it's kind of scary, and I don't recall the main character's the actor's name.
Right.
He looks much like Shia LaBeouf.
I think he looks like the son of Peter Riegert, for those fans for you fans of Animal House and Local Hero.
Yeah.
I think one of the things I like, I heard an interview with David Chase and Steve Van Zandt, who, guess what, is the musical supervisor and I believe one of the executive producers of the film. The knowledge of the music scene and the knowledge of what kids were listening to. They were playing in basements. They have these weird gigs in pizza halls and supper clubs, and they want to get out of Long Island and go to New York as if it is on the other side of the planet, which I think for some it is.
Yeah.
And, the fight between wanting to become a serious band, and there's one bandmate who is the oldest of the group, and he's already established in Long Island and doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
The fact that they captured that, I appreciated that more. So I think for me that overcame some of the cliche aspects of the story.
There is a great scene, and I don't know if I want to go into spoiling it, but it involves Brad Garrett as a record producer.
Yes.
And their reaction to what he says is, you know, I'm, it's just, it's really a great kind of picture of who these people are.
And it's a reminder that it's a business.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it, you know, it's sort of a harsh truth for them, but at the same time, you don't really think they should have the reaction to this that they had, you know. If you're going to go see it, you know, go see it and keep that in mind when that scene comes on. You'll be watching that. Gandolfini is really good. To me, it's, you're not going to really be surprised, you know, if you're just going in to see, watch this as a film.
Except for the ending. There's a moment.
Yeah, yeah.
It will bug some people, but not, like I said, not as much as the Sopranos ending, which I have no problem with whatsoever.
Oh, no, I still love that. I still argue that's a great ending.
So there. Yeah. So we got something there, Cubs?
Now that was a good movie.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we will talk about what's new on DVD, and we got the best and worst of 2012.
Right.
We have to make up for last week's lack of time for Dead People We Like and Into the Archives and the IFJA list, which if you haven't heard it yet, you're going to hear it today. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. Hanging out with Joe Shearer of the Film Yap and Kobe Slagle. First show of 2013. We're in year 5. We'll be better in year 4, we hope. We'll see. Who knows? Kind of a short list on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Well, I'm not 100% on this, but I will explain why. There's one website, which I'm not going to give credit to yet, that I check every week for titles. And they have a really good list of old and new titles. And, like, I know the big new title this week is Looper, which we'll get to in a minute. But I really appreciate when they talk about the older titles that are, you know, finally make it onto DVD and or Blu-ray, or occasionally you'll get a studio like Warner Brothers or Sony or one of the others that will just, you know, finally just slap a movie onto Blu-ray and put it out there. Well, apparently, according to this particular website, Warner Brothers released 200 movies out on Blu-ray, and I just kept scrolling and scrolling, and I was jotting down titles. I'm like, this can't be. Not on Tuesday, because Tuesday is the release day for DVD and Blu-ray. Of course, it was January 1st. So I decided, well, we'll skip it this week. as far as some of the old titles, because I love obviously talking about old titles here, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But a couple notes, Kobe, if you check IU Cinema in a second. But over at the IMA, if you don't have plans, and it's okay, you still got time, at 7 o'clock this evening, and on 2 o'clock, at 2 o'clock on Sunday, they have their Winter Nights series, and it's a this time it's the visual, it's called Visual Feasts. So you can actually, you could go see this film at 2 o'clock and listen to Film Sociology at 4 o'clock on Sundays. We might do a live show a Sunday at 4 o'clock. We might call you, Joe, sometime.
I'll be around.
Yeah, we might see, not this Sunday, folks, but we might do. Here's the thing: we are sometime in 2013. We will plot a live show on Sunday afternoon, and if you email either Kobe or myself and tell us you heard, you will get a prize package from WFYI. Hey,
you heard?
You heard. Y'all like it. So y'all love it. So anyway, as part of the, so this weekend they are starting with the film The Fall, which I don't get to say it's very often, from the director of Mirror Mirror, as well as The Cell, and somewhere in between that. Visually very impressive. It's set in a, well, originally it's set in a VA hospital in World War II, I believe, and it goes in all sorts of different directions, but it is a film for the eyes, most definitely. But some of the other films in the series, January 11th, Sin City, which is really fun to watch with an audience. I know there's an audience commentary track on all of Rodriguez's films.
Yeah.
That's one thing. See it with an audience. Worth it. Dangerous Liaisons, January 18th, great opportunity to see this film. On the big screen. I was in college and saw this when it first came out. Terrence Malick's Days of Heaven, when everybody was universally in love with Terrence Malick. that's January 25th. Now, it doesn't have a date. Sorry, whoever printed this in Nuvo. But I'm assuming following that, Apocalypse Now, which is a must-see on a big screen. Mm-hmm. February 8th and 10th, 2001. Space Odyssey, February 15th, Top Hat, which was great because we just showed Emma some Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies during the holidays. Oh, nice. And then February 22nd, the film I watched this year on Halloween, Night of the Hunter. Children. So anyway, all of those are coming to the IMA Winter Night series, so go check those out. Kobe, what is going on at IU Cinema at your alma mater at IU?
Well, it doesn't look like anything this weekend, but next weekend...
I think the semester's starting up, isn't
it?
Yeah,
so. Semester starts next Monday, actually. But next Thursday through Sunday, they're showing the 2012 drama foreign language film Taboo.
All right. So,
and also, yes? Sunday and Monday, the 13th and 14th, you can see at IU Cinema... Lawrence
of Arabia.
Lawrence of Arabia.
There's no words in that song. There are none.
He's an English guy.
It's not Leonard Lawrence of Arabia.
No, it's not. or Gertrude Lawrence, for that matter. Or Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence in Arabia, that would be a different story.
I would watch that.
Yeah, I know you'd watch. Yeah. We'd all film that and do the commentary.
And then somehow they go from Lawrence of Arabia one night to Spider-Man 2 the next.
You gotta give what the kids want sometimes.
Kids want the Spider-Man.
They want the amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Hey, Spider-Man 2 is really good.
It is.
Alfred Molina, you've never seen it?
Oh.
Wait a minute.
I saw Spider-Man.
You saw the first one.
Never saw 2 or 3, and then saw Amazing Spider-Man this summer.
Boy, aren't you lucky. Because we were complaining. Did we just finish this? Because 1 was cool. 2 I liked, I especially liked Alfred Molina in that.
Yeah.
3, I was like, I really want Thomas Hayden Church. And Thomas Hayden Church was fine, but there was a plot twist where, really, the butler just doesn't want to say anything, and we didn't have to go through all this nonsense.
Yeah.
And it just feels like that it was not enough time.
You know the butler, Bill Paxton's dad?
That's his dad?
Yeah, that's Bill Paxton's dad. Yeah, Sam Raimi confirmed that on the commentary for Spider-Man 3. He put it in a very bad performance.
This is the hard-hitting stuff you get here at Film Sociology. Thank you, Joe Shearer, and of the Film Yap.
Whenever you have a Spider-Man question, I'm here.
Really? But that was the problem. It's like, you couldn't say, and this isn't Remains of the Day. You couldn't say anything to Franco about this, so we didn't have to go through all this nonsense?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So that bothered me. Mm-hmm, yeah. But and the last one, the one that came out earlier this year, I liked it. I guess I needed a few more years before I wanted a reboot on that.
Yeah.
Okay. Looper.
Always do the right thing, Matt Soucy.
Oh, you have. He's got again. This is like wearing your new clothes, like the shirt I have on now, and your new toys you play with immediately after Christmas.
Absolutely.
Kobe has new sound to play with.
You drink your Haterade.
I do drink my Haterade.
Being a hater.
That's what the mug says. All right, Looper. Looper's out on Blu-ray and DVD. It's funny. I don't do a whole lot of reading up on. I generally don't do previews of what's coming in 2013 unless I'm asked or paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew this film was coming. It was from the director of Brick, and of course it has Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing the weirdest Bruce Willis impression. It's like if Bruce Willis and Kirk Cameron had a child. And it's time travel that immediately makes fun of people breaking down time travel movies.
Yeah.
Levitt plays a hitman, an assassin, a guy with a big gun who shoots older versions of people who are out. You know, their time is up, and he's got to take them back. And what happens when you have to shoot yourself?
Yeah.
And there's a great scene with Levitt and Willis at a diner, and Willis's character says, "If we start trying to break this down, we'll be here all day with matches and sticks, and we don't have time for that."
Yeah.
So, and then it just becomes a chase movie, a well done chase movie. Even when we get to everyone's favorite farm girl,
yeah.
Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
Hello, Mike Perry. and even with a couple of plot points that are a little on the wonky side, it was still fun to watch. It was still funny. I remember at the screening, people were immediately huddled into discussion groups and sort of trying to break down all the stuff that Bruce Willis told you not to do.
Yes.
So I enjoyed it. Joe, your thoughts?
I did. It's actually number 9 on my list.
It made your top 10.
Yeah.
Wow, we already broke the top 10.
Yeah,
there we go.
Yeah. It was really great, I thought. It slows down when you get to the farm, but you find...
If you're on a farm with Emily Blunt, you want time to slow down.
Absolutely, yeah. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt, yes, he very much wanted time
to
slow down.
That's a weird-looking look for him.
Yeah. He has the nose, and it gives the whole movie kind of this noirish kind of feel.
It does, and he's got the kind of old Willis passive, really doesn't give a darn attitude about life.
Yeah, and... It's one of those. It's sort of mind bending, but it doesn't get too complicated.
And again, don't be too thinky going into this.
Just understand, he's killing himself, but it's another person.
But it actually looks pretty interesting.
Yes,
from a preview perspective.
That's the preview's job. Thanks, Abdul. In other news, the sun rises.
So pay attention, but it's not going to make your head spin.
You're not going to get Inception headaches.
Yeah. You'll be able to keep up with it, but you know, pay attention anyway, because there's fun to be had.
There is.
Now that was a good movie.
Okay, now that we've actually tapped into your top 10,
okay.
I asked you put this out just a couple of days ago.
Yesterday.
Okay,
Thursday.
Nothing's really changed from your list.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen anything since I put it out. I did see since I actually compiled the list.
Yes.
In my head.
No.
I saw Flight, which I wouldn't add. So
it's okay.
Yeah. So
that's fine.
We're in good shape.
And the reason why I always bring up drafts and things like this, and I always remember the year that I named Brokeback Mountain best film of the year. That was 2005.
Yeah.
Goodness, wow. But And it was a good list. I remember that being a good list, and it was fun saying Brokeback Mountain was the best film of the year on commercial radio, and people were flipping out. but no, I did not do it because of that. It was the best film I had seen that year until about a month later when the film The Three Burials of Makita Estrada, starring and directed by Tommy Lee Jones, which really knocked me off my feet, and that became the top film of the year. So that's where I had a change in attitude as far as when we have to do a best and a worst 10 list.
Yeah.
So Joe, since we tapped into yours already,
okay,
please indulge us with your Joe Shearer of the Film Yaps top 10 films of 2012.
I'll try to keep this as entertaining as possible.
We only have 20 minutes. Go on.
Number 10, I'll just go through the list. Number 10,
okay.
The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Which I will say is on my honorable mention, and of course it's on the IFJA. I can't remember which one of us is, but one of the best films about high school.
Yes.
And yeah, you all the John Hughes haters, or not John Hughes haters, John Hughes fans, go away. Watch this and throw away all of your copies of The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Outstanding movie. And as we, I think we just, some of us discussed anyway, teenagers who seem to be teenagers on the screen.
Even Emily Watson.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Looper, we discussed, number 9. Number 8, the Indonesian action film, The Raid Redemption.
Yes, which won Best Foreign Film by the Doughy White Guys, by the IFJA.
Absolutely. See that movie if you like martial arts movies.
Even if you don't, I think you should see it.
Even if you don't, yeah.
We're telling you to see stuff anyway.
As I said in my review, even if you don't like the subtitles, ass-kicking is a universal language.
We got that. That's one right there.
Skyfall is number 7.
I'm sorry. Certain titles bring out the inner 12-year-old in all of us.
Number 6, Life of Pi.
Uh-huh.
Number 5, The Avengers.
Wow. That's not really a show. In other news, The Sun Rises.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the hey, I'm commercial.
Is an extremely satisfying summer movie.
It's not trying to be Lawrence of Arabia, so to speak. It doesn't want to be Bridge on the River Kwai. It doesn't even want to be The Dark Knight Rises. It just wants to do what it does.
And it was better than The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, and it just did everything.
It was supposed to. It delivered. Yes. And you don't have to have seen all of the others. Mm-hmm. You just got a bunch of people, and they got a Hulk.
Yes, exactly right. Number 4, The Gray. Which
You're the only one.
Yeah, yeah.
Liam Neeson versus wolves, although it's much more than that.
It's much more than that. And it's much less than that. Spoiler alert. Number 3, Silver Linings Playbook.
Okay.
Really, really enjoyed that. Number 2, Zero Dark Thirty, which...
Gee, I think we just broke the embargo review. No, I'm kidding. It opens next week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I may or may not have just said that.
No, that's fine.
Number 1, Django Unchained.
Really?
Favorite of the year.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I have quite the honorable mention list. I think has 13 films on it, including one I just added about 2 hours ago.
Which was?
Tonight You're Mine, which I could not remember if it was last year or this
year.
Oh,
okay. So we'll put an asterisk by it. Kind of like Maguire.
Yeah. Thank you very much for
You're
that.
You're welcome. Hey, you put it on my page. So
I have to throw out. We're not here to talk about the past.
Exactly. So I'm going to throw that right back. I was miserable last week. It's all right. My sports world's in the toilet. Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's see. My number 10 is – and I should note, this came off – what was number 10 and then just got blipped off the list a few days ago was Cabin in the Woods.
Yes.
Really enjoyed Cabin in the Woods. Yeah. That's one – if it gets a screenplay nomination, I will be a giddy 12-year-old.
Yes.
But we'll see.
Especially given how long it was on the shelf.
No kidding.
It was excellent to see. So, it was a really good movie.
Number 10, Les Mis. Mm-hmm. Yes. Big scope musical. Kobe just vomited a little bit in his mouth.
he did ask me if I was Les Miserables having watched it. Which I said, yeah, a little bit.
He said the Americanized version of a French title. Okay. Yes, I enjoyed it. Flawed and all, I still enjoyed the epic and the intimate scope of that. Number 9, The Sessions. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Helen Hunt.
Yes.
No, not just that. John Hawks had a tremendous year, and it's, again, this and Hope Springs, which probably is at the bottom of my honorable mention list, but treating sexuality in a mature fashion. Mm-hmm. So, very cool to that.
There was never those little moments.
Yeah, I mean, and I would even say Kathy Bates and About Schmidt,
mm-hmm.
I think, is handled in a mature way as opposed to Blue in old school. Let's put it that way. Number 8, Moonrise Kingdom. Chris Lloyd, I know you have a headache right now.
Uh-huh.
Number 7, Argo, which I think is the other really well-made popcorn movie. You mentioned The Avengers. That's a well-made grown-up popcorn movie if there ever was. Number 6 for me, Django Unchained.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed that. We'll get to that. Number 5, Zero Dark Thirty. Thank you, Jessica Chastain. Number 4, of course, because some critics get away with having a double feature, a tie. And this is my Texas dark comedy double feature of Bernie and Killer Joe. Yes, there is a film with Jack Black, which I think you should see, Kobe, because he's really good in it. It takes some of the stuff that maybe people like and put it in a different direction. there's some great visuals about capturing small town Texas, and McConaughey is very, of course, Matthew McConaughey, I believe, comeback player of the year.
Oh, yes.
Between these two films and Magic Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And Killer Joe, I'm just saying, it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
It is a dark, warped NC-17 Texas noir. Mm-hmm. McConaughey is really evil in it, and you'll never see Gina Gershon and Kentucky Fried Chicken in the same way ever again. But I loved it. Number three, Skyfall. That for me was the best popcorn movie, because it wasn't just a great Bond film, it was a great film, period.
Yeah.
So number two, Life of Pi, and number one, Beast of the Southern Wild. The top three all have the same theme of people dealing with their own immortality, whether you are a British secret agent, you're a guy stuck on a boat with a tiger, or you're a 7-year-old going through squalor, which happens to be in the modern United States. Mm-hmm. So Beast of the Southern Wild, I know, is out on DVD and Blu-ray, so go check that out. Some of the other titles on my honorable mentions, I said before, Cabin in the Woods, Wuthering Heights. I saw Wuthering Heights, which is a stripped-down version of a film that has been Masterpiece Theater to death. Mm-hmm. Perks of Being a Wallflower. Goon, which was my biggest surprise of the year, the Sean William Scott mm-hmm. film that's almost as good as Slapshot. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about 21 Jump Street. Was a lot of fun. The Master, despite its flaws, enjoyed that. Samsara. The mm-hmm. visual, another film that I wish it was at the visual festival going on at the IMA. Chicken with Plums, Lincoln, number of films that didn't make it because there were, you know, and remember we got a call, Ed and I, about the fact that we didn't have Lincoln on our list. If they had just not gone to the theater, it probably would have been a little higher, and Less of the Family. Mm-hmm. So, now, much credit I have to give to Ed Johnson, because he doesn't do a worst 10. He did, I think, when he has done this, the five most irritating films.
Ah.
And usually me, I've done this in the past, but I'm not going to talk about the past. No. But when it comes to me, November, December, I start looking for films that look like they could qualify to be on either list. Mm-hmm. And 90% of the time, it's the other list. So I'm watching a lot of bad stuff in November, December.
Yeah.
And I've decided to just stop doing that. Mm-hmm. If you know, people will say, well, what about so-and-so didn't make the worst list? Well, I reviewed something else that opened that day. So full disclosure, I didn't see That's My Boy.
Okay.
That's why it's not on my worst list. Mm-hmm. I saw something else that was opening that weekend. So there.
Yeah.
But what do you have on your worst?
Well, and I have that same deal. And actually, we recorded our podcast for the Yappies last night. And Chris and
the Yappies?
And, yes.
Do you have little trophies?
We're working on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It has to be like, but it can't look like the Stones logo. But you have the mouth logo. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It'll be the bullhorn. You know.
Great.
Well, we got it in the works.
Okay.
But you know, we said a lot of times the really worst of the worst films we don't see because they don't screen them for us.
And it opens, we got to move on to something else.
So
Madea's Witness Protection didn't make the list.
Yeah, no. They know we're not the target demographic for Madea and that kind of stuff. This Means War is one that Nick Rogers, one of the Yappers, insists is the worst movie of the year.
Wow.
But I have not seen that and a few other things.
Well, it's about two guys trying to sneak in on Reese Witherspoon, so I have no idea what
they're both spies.
And yeah,
Tom Hardy and Chris Pine.
You can understand what Tom Hardy's saying in this film.
Yeah, yeah, so. Yeah. He's not wearing, as a certain video I love says, he's not wearing a crab on his face.
Right.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen that video, I got to send it to you.
Okay.
By the way. Okay. My worst. Now I do have a bottom eight. This time
that's fine.
I'll run through them. The Raven. Did not.
They were trying to do Sherlock Holmes only with John Cusack.
Edgar Allan 7, we can call it. Edgar
Allen great.
7,
okay.
Yeah. Dark Shadows.
Tim Burton. The 70s are wacky, aren't they?
Yeah, Tim Burton asked us to poke fun at something no one remembers.
The problem is, I do remember it, and I know people who did remember it. It was just I would have preferred they actually maybe did a regular episode as opposed to let's do the fish out of water. And the 70s are funny, Kobe. What are the 70s?
Yeah.
Different time.
Yes.
And the clothes and the music and wow.
Now when I was a kid, maybe kindergarten age, my mom watched Dark Shadows every day, and I couldn't wait to watch it, and I loved it, but I remember very little about it. I remember a little bit about the revival series with Ben Cross and among other people, and I really loved that show. you know, back when it was on, I think I was 12, 13 years old. I was really looking forward to a big screen version of it. And when I saw it, I was like,
this is it.
This is what they're doing. They're, you know, he's got the white face and it's funny, 70s, haha. And very disappointing. Chernobyl Diaries.
Oh, they screened that? Wow.
No, but I paid money to see it with my nephew in Ohio.
How old's your nephew?
Yeah, he is 14.
Target audience.
Yeah. It's dumb people doing dumb things, and it just gets progressively dumb.
Kobe, what is he doing?
What is it?
It's dumb.
There you go.
It's awful. I don't even know what else to say. It's just
very
awful. Don't
very
be bothered.
Wrath of the Titans. Which I could not even make it through. I watched it on Blu-ray.
Oh.
I watched some of it on Blu-ray.
Different thing.
I said, no. House at the End of the Street, Jennifer Lawrence's.
The Elizabeth Shue is her mom. And was that screened for us or no?
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay.
So was, yeah.
All right.
I didn't pay for that, but
I'm glad. No, we don't.
I didn't.
Sorry.
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh.
That movie could have been a lot of fun, but it wasn't.
I see.
Yeah. No.
You got that right.
Okay. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
That's on my list. Nobody asked for this.
Yeah,
nobody.
Yeah, not one, but two urinating fire scenes.
Yeah. I don't need
plus
that.
Plus Nicolas Cage on acid. Or something.
No. Poor Kieran Hines. I hope he got a good check for this. I like Kieran Hines.
Idris Elba also.
Well, you know what? It's funny. Kieran Hines is doing Cat on a Hot Tin Roof on Broadway. So I'm like, oh, that's why he did Ghost Rider.
Yeah. Idris Elba is doing his superhero double dip between this
and
Thor.
That's a shame.
Yeah. And then the worst movie of the year, again, chafing Nick Rogers a little bit, Battleship.
Okay. Hold on.
Wait a
minute.
What about Mirror Mirror?
I would not call Mirror Mirror the worst film.
No,
but you wouldn't
close.
Put it on your list.
No, I wouldn't put it on my list. I don't think it was a good movie by any means, but it wasn't.
But there were other things that were far worse.
The problem with both Snow White movies was I wish Mirror Mirror had a little darker aspect to it, and on the flip side, I wish Snow White and the Huntsman
Snow White and Thor.
Yes, no. I wish Snow White and Thor wouldn't take itself so damn serious.
Yeah.
If they had maybe just combined them, I would have probably liked that more. Okay, Dark Shadows is on my dishonorable mention. Number five, Ghost Rider. Number four, One for the Money. We complain about Katherine Heigl's choices of romantic comedies. Well, she can't do crime comedies either.
No.
That was just unpleasant to watch. Number three, Joyful Noise.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton doing an episode of Glee, only it's in the movies and it's gospel, and they don't like each other.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
They don't like each other, and they don't get along.
I bet.
On the same gospel team.
I bet they have a change of heart.
God. Number two, and of course, I've battled about this, but it started with the opening scene, and it didn't. Go at all didn't go any better at all, but This Is 40.
Mm-hmm.
Boo-hoo, we get old. Get over it. The only reason why this didn't make number one on my list is because Albert Brooks and John Lithgow made me laugh out loud.
Yeah.
So it cannot be the worst thing because it actually did something more. And my number one is the really dumb film Battleship.
Yeah.
This idiot gets a really high ranking in a quick period of time that we don't see.
Yeah.
Liam Neeson gets a big pay. You think Liam Neeson would have single-handedly taken the aliens with what he did in The Gray, and he just kind of disappears. The other thing about this film that really irritates me is there's a sequence that has survivors of Pearl Harbor, and they are honored. And then they become a plot point two-thirds of the way through the movie with AC/DC blaring in the background as they work on the old rust bucket to help out. And there was a part of the thing that made me feel that if you dare to criticize this film, then you hate America.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a real, real turnoff.
I actually have a theory that Peter Berg was making an anti-rah-rah USA movie, but not telling anyone. Because
he could have fooled the hell out of us.
and that's why I say even if this was his shot at Starship Troopers, it still was terrible because he did not make it quite clear enough that's what he was doing.
No. So yeah. there's a list. It might change next month. Yeah. You'll see. You can also go to the IFJA list. You can check it out at the Film app and our page. But there's a few. We have a do you have the intro?
Oh, yes.
We have the thanks to you guys because you came up with this. We didn't have time for this last
week.
Doing
the annual show of dead people we like.
There's a pretty big one this
we
week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Now, we didn't have time for this last week because of the Mountain Jam by the Allman Brothers, known as Kobe's highlight reel. It's okay, it was great. But there were two major ones, of course, with Charles Durning.
Yeah.
And with Jack Klugman. And the thing that was great about Durning, and I loved it, of course, Durning was, somebody said he was part of, you know, Burt Reynolds' Rat Pack, and he's done a number of films with him. Of course, was in The Sting and Dog Day Afternoon. He had back-to-back supporting actor nominations for Best Little Whorehouse in Texas and To Be or Not to Be. Mm-hmm. He played Santa Claus 5 times in different TV movies. Yeah. Of course, he shows up in Hudsucker Proxy and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And did a lot of stage work in TV and movie, and just a working guy. And then when he died, the stories came out about him and all the stuff that he did in World War II. Mm-hmm. Go check out his obituary in the New York Times. And he tells a story about a hand-to-hand moment that he has. And it's just absolutely gut-wrenching. Wow. So yeah, I love the working guys, and this guy worked his butt off.
Yeah,
so thank you, Charles Durning. And Jack Klugman, yes, we all know him from The Odd Couple and Quincy, but he was also one of the original 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yes.
He was Jack Lemmon's sponsor in Days of Wine and Roses, and you know, worked quite a bit. And also go to his list and check out some of the films that he appeared in. But a lot of TV as well. 2 Minute Warning was another one. The sniper at the football game movie from the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Also Mike Hoppins, who was an award winning sound editor for Lord of the Rings, and also worked on The Frighteners, Heavenly Creatures, King Kong, Transformers. So there are those. Now we have just enough time to go into the archives briefly. Because Warner Brothers can give you movies that they can burn online. They don't sell them in stores, or as Kobe puts it.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Yeah, only in this case it's $20. Interesting, by coincidence, a film with Jack Klugman was on my list of movies that I needed to watch. And it's the 1968 crime drama The Split, which stars Jim Brown. And it's a heist movie with a gaggle of interesting characters. Jim Brown, Diane Carroll, Gene Hackman shows up 2/3 of the way through the movie. This is right after he did Bonnie and Clyde as a cop. Jack Klugman, Warren Oates, Ernest Borgnine, Donald Sutherland, Julie Harris, and James Whitmore.
Wow.
Pretty impressive cast. Music by Quincy Jones, a.k.a. Rashida's dad. And... I have to double check this, but according to some sources, this was the first R-rated movie to come out by the MPA movie rating system back in 1968. So it's a heist of a stadium. Guess what? They don't trust each other. You know, it's a leisurely 90 minutes or so. But it's also based on a Richard Stark novel. Richard Stark, who of course wrote the Outfit, Point Blank, which was also made badly into Payback with Mel Gibson. Mm-hmm. He also wrote the screenplay for The Grifters and the original story for The Stepfather.
Wow.
So there is that. So, okay. Wow, that was a quick hour. Here's some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
You can go check out Joe and Chris and the rest of the gang's writings and, you know, things.
The rest of their yaps.
Yeah, their yaps at?
www.thefilmyap.com.
So, Joe, thank you for hanging out with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And until next time, go see a good movie. You deserve it. That was under Throat Cope. Just like that Jets guy. Go. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
That Jets guy.
Not for long.
Good night, yeah. Fort Myers. We gone.